We have a guest on the phone today, and it's Dr. Pippin, is board certified in internal medicine, cardiovascular diseases, and nuclear cardiology. He has been on several medical school faculties, including Harvard Medical School and the Medical College of Virginia, where he was chosen cardiology professor of the year 3 times. He has held many clinical research and administrative leadership positions and was a director of cardiovascular medicine and medical imaging at Cooper Clinic in Dallas before joining PCRM in 2005. Dr. Pippin is the author or co-author of more than 60 articles and abstracts that have been published in leading medical journals. He also has served as an invited guest and panelist for the NIH National Human Subjects Protection Workshop, the American College of Cardiology, and the Society of Nuclear Medicine.
Hello, Dr. Pippin. Thanks for being our guest today.
Hi, how are you? Is this John?
Yes, it is.
Hi, it's good to talk with you.
Oh, and likewise with you, sir. Well, you've read the news. There's been a diabetes breakthrough. Toronto scientists have cured mice of diabetes. Now, that is really big news, and it's been all over the place. And, of course, Canadians take a great deal of pride in the fact that Canadian researchers are involved. And what with Sir Frederick Banting and his history and so on, why, this is very big news. What do you think? Do you think this procedure will work in humans, or is this just another dead end?
The way I think of these stories, John, is like I think of fake news. You know, the practice that sometimes government agencies or companies use where they will package information and send it to a news organization or a TV station, and they'll put it on the air as if it were news when, in fact, it's really public relations more than anything else. That's what this is. This is the scientific equivalent of fake news.
Because
the finding of curing diabetes in these mice, first of all, it may well not be that at all because it hasn't been verified, but it has absolutely nothing that history shows us to do with accomplishing the same in humans. And I've read this story, and there are quotes here that are exactly like quotes from other scientists who have cured diabetes in mice. It's not the first time this has happened, you know. We can talk about that in a minute. But I couldn't believe it. One doctor says, mice with diabetes suddenly didn't have diabetes anymore. Another doctor says, I've never seen anything like it. In my career, this is unique. Well, I've gone through a lot of the literature on diabetes research in animals and, in fact, cures that have been found in animals. The language is always the same. The hype is always tremendous. And do we have a cure for diabetes yet? John, I'm not aware that we do.
No, but I don't think
they
so
have,
either.
They have all failed. Uh-huh. This is a typical animal research breakthrough hype. We would love to believe it. We'd love it to be true. But if you track these kinds of fantastic news stories through the course of events and actually look at the human tests down the road, almost universally, once in a while, something will lead to a significant discovery. But almost all the time, they don't work in humans. Now, I promise you something else. You won't ever see that story in the newspaper.
So what, like 95%, 96%, 97% never make it?
Well, that's for drugs that are tested. Mm-hmm. But if you look at two ways that we track these animal research breakthroughs, one is called systematic reviews, where you look at all the animal research, and then you go find the corresponding human research to see if it worked. And the other is citation analysis, where you look at these kinds of reports, and then you look at the clinical trials and see if these reports are referenced at all. In other words, did they contribute in any way to the human results? And you get similar sorts of correlations, less than 10% in most cases. So one of the things that's frustrating about trying to educate people about the futility of using animals to study human diseases is that there is no barrier to this breakthrough hype, this snake oil selling. And there is no routine follow-up to hold these scientists' feet to the flame to show that they're actually producing something. Now, you're going to make a tape of this, I presume, and you'll have an archive.
Yes.
I'm going to say, this is risky, but I'm going to say, in a year or two or three, when the human testing is done, pull this tape up and see whether this was a success or a failure. The odds are overwhelming that this is going to be one more in a long line of failed cures for diabetes and rodents.
Aren't they going to start clinical trials almost immediately in the new year so that there's not even going to be testing on other species?
I don't know.
I think that's what I read in one article.
In the U.S., of course, you'd have to submit this to the FDA and get what's called an IND, Investigational New Drug Approval, so you could begin doing human testing. I don't know what the equivalent process is in Canada. But I'm hopeful that they will get that done. The sooner this translation is attempted in humans, the sooner we'll know whether this is a good result or just one more failure.
And by failure, you may include the fact that human beings will be hurt by it or killed or whatnot.
Well, it could be. Yeah. Typically in clinical research translations from animal research, it's done slowly and carefully enough that that you detect those kinds of problems fairly early on. But you're right. Sometimes they do sneak through even the early human trials, and it's not until these things are out in the mainstream that you begin to discover that they're killing people, like Vioxx and Regulin, which was a diabetes drug that was terrific in animals and killed hundreds of people. So, yes, sometimes it happens. Hopefully you're going to find those mistakes earlier than that.
No, I don't know. I'm just looking through that paper, that article from the National Post, and I don't see anything about the procedure that they used. It was a substance P or something that they injected into the mouse's, I think it was the pancreas, and targeting the pain receptors. Is that right? Is something
yeah, the
like that?
Theory, the theory behind how people get this type 1 diabetes that is caused by failure of the pancreas to be able to produce enough insulin is that something triggers an immune response. In other words, the body's own immune cells begin to attack the cells of the pancreas that produce insulin, and they destroy those cells. And that produces diabetes. And much of the research that's been done in animals has focused on the immune system and finding ways to try to block that response. Where this is different is the researchers claim that that it's pain receptors in the pancreas, so-called nociceptors, that are responsible for this because it's their responsibility to produce the substance that prevents that immune system attack from taking place. So the theory is if these receptors in the pancreas are perceiving painful stimuli, that they will not produce enough of the substance that blocks the effect of the immune system. So the theory is if you relieve that condition with this substance P or whatever, that these nociceptors will then release enough of the substance to inhibit the immune system, the pancreatic cells won't die, and they'll be able to make insulin. That's the theory.
Mm-hmm. Now, in human beings, clinical clues will sometimes suggest new research, right? And then it'll be modeled in animals or something, and if it fails, well, then they'll discard it and disregard the human findings, and so the cure is thrown in the garbage. And that's the sort of procedure that happens all the time, isn't it not?
Well, sadly it
happen,
is.
Yeah.
And you know, the frustrating thing from the point of view of us who try to educate the public about this is that it happens over and over, and it's as if researchers have lost the ability to learn from their mistakes. Let me just give you a couple of examples. This is not even the first cure of diabetes in rodents this year. It's the third one.
Yeah, I got one right here that I took from the BBC. I'll just go ahead.
That's right. In February 2006, there was a report of from a group at the University of Minnesota here in the States, where they transferred pig pancreas cells into monkeys.
Oh, boy.
Are you following me here? And they found that they could reverse some of the changes that caused diabetes by giving pig islet cells to monkeys. Now, never mind the fact that every xenotransplantation, that is, species to species, that has been done in humans has resulted in death of the human within 18 months. Never mind that. We haven't even mastered xenotransplantation. There's not one piece of evidence in the world that this is transferable to humans. And in April 2006, but they cured monkeys of diabetes. Well, we'll see what comes of that.
Well, did the monkeys really have diabetes, or is it just a simulation?
They produced diabetes in the monkeys. So you cannot create human diabetes in any animal. But all of these tests that are done in animals that are developed to mimic to the greatest extent possible the human condition. So it's always a crapshoot in terms of whether you're even talking about apples and apples.
Mm-hmm.
And these mice are a good example of that. I'll talk about that in a second. But in April 2006, there was a report from California, La Jolla Institute in San Diego, that by combining a monoclonal antibody and a peptide, they could cure mice of diabetes.
Wow, we're already getting somewhere.
So that's two. Now, good for the Toronto scientists, but they're only the third one in 2006.
Oh, well, let me quote one, too. A cure for diabetes could be a step closer after scientists found cells from the spleen can transform into insulin-producing cells, and so they transplanted cells from healthy mice into sick mice, and lo and behold, they were able to halt and even reverse the disease in mice. So you can imagine the triumph.
Yeah. Now that research was done in 2001 and 2003, and it was done in a genetically modified mouse called a non-obese diabetic mouse, or NOD mouse, and it was done at Massachusetts General Hospital. And there are some... there are some quotes in that research that are very much like the quotes I mentioned at the beginning of this. Let me just tell you one. This is Dr. Faustman, the main researcher in that. She said, "We showed this amazing treatment could cure end-stage mice." And by that she means mice with end-stage diabetes. And there was pretty much disbelief that you could cure end-stage mice. So this is a almost a carbon copy of the very strong claims that we're seeing in this article that you're focusing on today. Well, 2 years later, three different studies came out from Harvard, from the University of Chicago, and from Washington University in St. Louis, showing it didn't work. The feeling was that by giving these spleen cells to the mice, they were acting in some regard like stem cells, and that they could differentiate into cells that would repopulate the pancreas and produce insulin. Well, three different places tried to duplicate this. Now, remember, this was the cure. This was the cure for diabetes. It didn't work. And they showed that the spleen cells, well, actually, they don't differentiate into cells that go into the pancreas. And they found that the reason the first researcher got cures is that they stopped the treatments they were using to attack the immune system that produced the diabetes in the first place. Mm. So that didn't work. That was a cure. There's another genetic model called the STZ, or streptozotocin diabetic mouse, that has been used to find several potential treatments, none of which has used in humans. And then, when they tried to figure out why, they found out that this particular strain of genetically modified mouse can live without insulin. Now, that's you and I can't live without insulin for very long. We'd be dead.
Yeah.
But this mouse can live without insulin. So everything worked. Of course it did. The mouse would have lived anyway.
So they create a monster.
And there's other models like the Zucker rat that we use to study obesity and high blood pressure and diabetes. Well, you can give the Zucker rat the clinical form of diabetes in that you can give insulin and it doesn't work, but the rat's blood sugar doesn't go up. So of course, everything you try in that rat is going to work.
Why aren't these people laughed off the stage? Instead, they get brilliant photo ops here. I see this guy standing here beaming with his discovery. He's got a test tube in his hand with the miracle potion in it.
Uh-huh.
And it's a sugar-like molecule reducing tangles in brains of laboratory animals. Well, they think they're going to curtail Alzheimer's disease. They got Alzheimer's mice. You know,
yeah.
And then when they fail, then they go looking for more models, don't they? And then in the same way and in the same place, and they never learn or teach.
Yeah, I know a couple of people who are honest animal researchers, and I'm not saying that to be derogatory, but they're animal researchers with a big overview. And they tell me that the fundamental problem is that when you are trained in this science and you truly believe in this science, you can't see that the fundamental basis is wrong. Your answer to failure is always, we need a better animal model.
Mm-hmm.
The answer is there somewhere. We have to keep looking. But when they found out that the kind of mice they did all the immunological research on actually had an extra thymus gland that nobody knew about, you know, and you wonder why the research in these animals never produces any clinical results. Mm-hmm. The response of the animal researchers wasn't, well, boy, that was pretty stupid. We shouldn't have been using a mouse that had an extra thymus gland. The response was, well, we'll have to try a different animal and do all that research all over again.
Yeah.
That's the problem with it, is the inability to see the forest for the trees and to understand that it's not the specific animal that you're using, it's the fact that it's not a human, and it won't translate. There's a real good online journal called Pelos, the Library of Science Journal, just had a review article on the translation of animal tests to human medicine, and the scientist who wrote it, who's a basic science researcher, he called the translation of animal test results to human benefit, I'm quoting now, a round-trip journey from bench to nowhere. Okay? Now, this is from an animal researcher. This realization is out there to some extent, but it is a very perplexing thing that we can't seem to climb this mountain. There is a deaf ear, and the public, I guarantee you, in Canada will respond to this with great expectations, and they will not remember this 2-3 years down the road when it fails, and there's no story in the paper about, oh, remember that big breakthrough we had? Well, it kind of wasn't really. They'll never see that story. So the impression you go away with is that all animal research results translate into human benefit.
Yeah.
The truth is virtually no animal testing results translate into human benefits, but you never see the other side of the equation.
But and yet, as you say, the vivisectors, the animal experimenters, are well aware of the arguments against them.
Well, some of them are. Some of them never admit it. As I said, they really believe the answer is in the animal model. It is, after all, a biological system. You know, they have hearts and lungs and spleens and livers and kidneys and so on. The problem is that no matter how you modify the genes or how you add one substance or take another out, it's still in the body of a mouse or a rat or a monkey or a dog or a rabbit, and it still has to function in that environment, and you just cannot translate it to humans. Let me give you an example that ought to end this argument, but it doesn't. In so-called identical twins, human twins that are from the same egg, monozygotic twins, the general thinking has always been that genetically they are as close to identical as you can be. Same species, same egg, same genetic material from the mother and the father. What more could you ask for? Well, now there are studies showing that even identical twins will respond to treatments and drugs differently from each other because, although they have virtually the same genes, they have different triggers to turn these genes on and off. They have different hormone levels and various other things. So even in identical twin humans, you cannot use one response to predict another. And you're going to tell me that because you cured diabetes in these mice that you think this is going to work in humans and everybody's all excited about it? These guys need to get a life. There is, unless they can show somehow, historically or with their own research, that there is a translation of this to people, they ought to stop the hype. But the purpose of the hype is to keep the money coming.
Yeah.
This is PR. This is not science. This is PR. We'll see the science down the road, or at least, you know, those of us who keep track of it will. But the people of Canada are not likely to see if this thing blows up in human trials.
And it's going to create a bigger and bigger business. And the cruelty to human beings who now must live in a state of no cure and are slowly wasting away and dying piece by piece, that suffering is added on to the enormous suffering of the animals who are, have to endure all this false human, I don't know what, I don't know what
that,
interference.
When people ask me, you know, so what? So some animals die and it doesn't work, we'll just do more animals. Say, well, you know, even if you feel that way, and shame on you if you do, but even if you feel that way, you've got to think what the human cost is. Billions of dollars of research flushing down the toilet in ways that almost never produce effective results. Years of delay in finding answers because we follow these dead ends. And not least of all, John, frankly, the cost in hope. In the hope of people who are waiting for a cure for diabetes, who are waiting for a cure for paralysis, waiting for a cure for HIV and AIDS, or waiting for treatments that will help reverse stroke symptoms. They're not happening, and the reason they're not happening is we're not doing the right kind of research. So there are many costs other than the cost to animals.
The answer, then, is banishment under criminal law, is it not?
Well, you know,
we have to go soon, so please...
Okay, well, diabetes is not the only disease where this is true. Smoking and lung cancer, same thing.
Sure.
Animal tests didn't predict. HIV, AIDS, over 80 vaccines have failed in humans. Stroke, over 150 treatments. Every one has failed in humans. Spinal cord injury, every treatment has failed in humans. There are whole terrible diseases that have had decades of animal research and have had no results in humans, and the public doesn't know this. And this is not from me, by the way, John. This is information from government agencies like the FDA and NIH.
We'll have to have a longer interview next time. Thanks very much, Dr. Pippin, for being on our show.
It's great to talk with you.
Oh, thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Dr. Pippin is a medical and research advisor for the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine.